We're serious.
We're calling the order of the Senate Special Committee on Health Care Reform. This is Wednesday, February 28, 2007. Sorry for the delay, folks. I'll make a couple announcements before we get started. My co-chair, I'm sure, will also make a few statements real quickly, too. Show of hands first. Are you interested in what the rainy day and corporate kicker issue is right now? It's just been decided. If you want me to read it to you, I will. Otherwise, I won't. Size of the rainy day fund to be 7.5% of the general fund. Corporate kicker suspensions a one-time only for 05-07 biennium. There will be a separate bill. This is not part of the agreement. There's a separate bill coming through to potentially eliminate the corporate kicker. Interest in the rainy day fund will accrue to the rainy day fund only. There will be a small business exemption of $24.8 million on gross sales. That's out of the corporate kicker, which we now believe is going to be close to $300 million, so we'll lose $24.8 million. That basically holds harmless companies inside Oregon. Replenishment of sources, ending balance capped at 1% of general fund beginning with the 07-09 biennium. It means the ending balance can go into this fund. Single biennium extraction cap, two-thirds of the fund. In other words, you can't take more than two-thirds out of the fund any one biennium once it builds. Triggers are the ones we know about with two quarters of recession, and I won't go through that. Corporate minimum and inheritance tax is also part of the agreement tonight. The corporate minimum tax will be the Republican version, which is twice the governor suggested. If I remember our figures right, that is going to bring in about 100 and, help me, Ben, 50 million?
151
million. Inheritance tax will go from a 1 million exemption to a 2 million exemption, but will not reconnect with any federal laws. The structure of this agreement will be two bills are on out. The first bill will be a kicker and rainy day fund. The second will be the corporate minimum and inheritance tax. The Senate Bill 3, which is in the Senate now and going to full Ways and Means on Friday morning, will still be pushed through, but will be dropped once these bills come across the House with a 40 vote, and once they pass the Senate with 18 or 20?
20. 40 and 36. One bill requires 40, one requires 36. Same in the Senate. One's 20, one's 18.
One 18, 20 and 18, and on the governor's desk. At that time, the Senate Bill 3 and the accompanying legislation with it will be dropped. So that's what happened tonight. I think it's a good thing for the Oregon legislature. It shows we can work together. We've come up to a bipartisan solution. I'm kind of proud of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle. Thank you very much.
And this is Rod Sterling, and you are now
in the twilight zone.
Chair, if you count the current rainy day fund for schools, it's 12.5%, I believe.
Yes, if you add in the 5% in the current one, it's up to 12.5%. And one group wanted 5, one wanted 10, they split the difference. And let's not worry about getting the perfect, what some might consider the perfect for the good. This is a huge step for Oregon to have an actual, real, honest-to-God rainy day fund. We've waited only 100 years, and we're there. So I think it speaks well. This might be the session that we look back on in future years as one of those sessions that really got the job done. So I'm very proud of people on both sides in this one. Thank you. And that's where some of our people are. And I think also, is the health committee still meeting at this time? So we'll have a few members probably coming in. I'd like to say two other things also about this particular committee now. I want to make it perfectly clear as much as I can that what we're looking at and accomplishing through this committee is to set up a superstructure that will radically change, or not radically, but progressively change health care in this state and how it's delivered to make it accessible and affordable. We expect that the superstructure we set up will bring back issues which will take confirmation by the legislature either in February of 08 or January of 09. We do not expect that entity to come back with something that is law by powers given to them by this committee. At the same time, they will be given some responsibilities, I believe, that do have the effect of law, but they won't be the major issues we're dealing with. That needs to come back to the legislature to be voted on and discussed and affirmed. Secondly, we are going to enter a new part of this committee hearing, and starting that on Monday night, we're going to start going to what I call hard copy. We have now covered two or possibly three major issues. which I believe we can now put into nearly LC language, which we'll bring back to this committee on Monday for discussion. It's time to stop cutting bait and start fishing. And I think we've reached that point, and we need to start moving forward very quickly and getting this done. Having said that, I'll turn it over to my co-chair if he'd like to make any comments, or correct, as he always does, anything I've said incorrectly.
Yeah, I prefer to characterize it, as opposed to fishing, as catching. And I do believe that Representative Greenlick needs to gavel in the subcommittee of the subcommittee.
I will gather in a subcommittee for the purpose of discussions of the Subcommittee on Healthcare Access of the House Committee on Healthcare. I never actually gaveled off the last one, so we're probably still in session.
No.
But at least you are duly recognized in as soon as the Health Policy Commission or committee upstairs adjourns and Dennis wanders in from the press conference. I think we'll have a full contingent this evening. With that, let's just get going. The great representation is that even though we are starting late, the director himself has promised us we will be out of this meeting early tonight. So,
Mr. Chair, could I make a comment?
Of course.
Thank you. And it's just an observation I've made. The Senate has three committees dealing with various aspects of health care. I sit on all three of them. And Senator Mona Sanderson's committee, I think, once we've dealt with the issue of state hospital, is going to be delving deeply into the issue of the mental health delivery system at the local level, which is incredibly appropriate, and I think we're going to do some very positive things. But while we are here looking at the future, I'm wondering if at any point in time is there any committee going to be looking at what we could be doing this coming biennium for the standard population, things like that.
I've convened a meeting on Tuesday, a sort of just schmoozing meeting with the stakeholders in this to talk about what can be done in this biennium. From a set of bills we have in the House or other bills we need. So I expect to begin, say, a discussion of what can be done in the interim while we're waiting for the models that can come out of Senate Bill 329. And I expect to start hearings on that maybe the week after next.
I'd like to respond to you, too. Children's Initiative, what we call the Children's Initiative bill, actually has, of course, a bump for OHP standard up to $45,000. With the agreement tonight, we'll have more of a global look at the budget.
That's true.
And it might open it up to a discussion, considering all the factors involved for K-12 or anything else, of whether or not we want to open a discussion up about OHP standard going to a higher number.
Mr. Chair, actually, that bill doesn't have that bump in it.
It's in the governor's budget.
It's in the governor's budget as one of the possible uses of tobacco tax, and the question is what the final nature of that healthy kids is, may or may not preclude using that money that way.
We had a long discussion about that in Ways and Means this afternoon. It was at that point it was clear to us that part of the agreement of moving this bill forward with it is that the governor's budget would be upheld to include at least moving it to 45,000 lives for OHP.
Actually, part of the agreement we thought we had in the House was exactly the opposite of that.
Well, this is out of Ways and Means. We'll see which happens. But the discussion should be opened up. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's just, we've got an incredible increase in revenue, and I know the focus in this building is always on K-12. But when we're looking, for example, at the sheer disaster we're having in mental health delivery, we need to put resources in there, and I think we would be missing the boat if we didn't have at least as much focus on the needs of our healthcare system as we do our education system as we move forward. So just thought I'd bring that up.
Excellent comment. Thank you.
In that vein, Mr. Chair, we had another announcement, another press conference today that our very own Bruce Goldberg stood at with the governor, where they announced the locations
Right.
Of the two main facilities. One will be located here in Salem on the state hospital grounds and one in Junction City. So while that doesn't create one bed tonight or tomorrow or even the next day, at least those locations are identified and we can start rolling through with what I term as the I-5 corridor solution and then the separate solution east of the mountains with the 16-bed community facilities. It's actually a very significant step forward. We thank you, Bruce, for your efforts on that and as well as the governor. So, good job.
And with that comment, I'd like to turn the meeting over to Bruce Goldberg to lead us through tonight's conversation, which is, if I remember right, access.
This was the perfect setting because it is, the timing's right. I've got my sleeves rolled up tonight because we've been doing a lot of talking, and tonight we have to wrap up the talking and start to move towards action, and I think that's exactly what everybody's been talking about. Senator Cruz was talking about we need to think about, and Representative Greenlee, some of the issues here and now. At the same time, as we look towards the future, we have some immediate needs that we need to address in this state as we look to plan out for the future. We are building some new state mental health care facilities, but we immediately need to create the community capacity to deliver services so that people don't end up in the hospital, but we keep them out. All this kind of fits. So it is 25-6. I think we could very quickly, what I'd like to propose is very quickly that we have a discussion about access. Talk about some of the directions to what's been referred to as an entity. Senator Bates called it tonight a superstructure. They call it a super trust.
Hello? If you're going to have sidebars.
Not me.
Thank you.
We drafted some concepts around a structure, an entity, a super fund, a super trust. We've talked about benefits. We've talked about eligibility. Tonight we're going to talk about access. Those are four pretty big things to chew off. And if we can very quickly wrap up access tonight, what I'd like to propose is that now is the time to roll up sleeves. There are a lot of parking lot issues. There's still issues about quality, transparency, and all the things on the list, funding, payment, etc. But there's been a lot of talk, and your goal is to come out of here with a bill. And if we can tonight quickly get through access, I think what that sets up is the ability for over the next several days for some people to get together and try and synthesize the discussions that we've had and put it into some conceptual language for a bill to then bring that back to you as a committee early next week so that we can actually roll up our sleeves and get something done. Does that sound like a reasonable plan?
Maybe.
Yes.
I didn't say you had to agree with the bill. I didn't say you had to vote for it. But would you help craft it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That's good. But would you agree to that? And you agree to moving this process along? Okay.
Okay, Bruce.
What's that, Brito?
I would never stand in the way of a process that was moving.
Okay. It sounds like we
how we know it's
from
moving.
From the left, from the right. We will know it's moving when we have a bill.
Language in front of us.
That's the outcome. I mean, the outcome of legislatures is legislation. And so that's the outcome.
Actually,
the outcome is 31-16. Well, now you're talking politics. and I know enough to stay out of the way of that. So, here's... We're going to talk about access tonight, and what I'd like to do is try and simplify this and get some thoughts from you. We're coming up with some instructions again to this entity to go out and design a system that promotes access, and you need to give them some instructions. Yeah? And we could probably talk about this for 3 months, maybe four, but I think if you boil it down, you could maybe boil this down to a couple of things that you want them to do, and I want to present them to you and get your feedback and have you fill in what I left out or X out what you don't like that I put in there. In the end, what we're talking about is we wanted a system that assured universal access. The first question that comes up is, well, access to what? And we're not going to answer that tonight, because we've talked about that. And it's going to be access to this benefit package that you've come up with. The issue then is, how do you instruct this entity? What do you mean by, how do you want them to assure that you have access to this benefit package to health, to health care, et cetera?
Actually, Bruce, it's not access to a benefit package.
It's access to the services covered by a benefit package.
Right? So it's the services. We heard that when we talked about the benefit package. And we also heard it's really, and in the end, it's about outcomes. So it's really not even about access to the services. You want to assure it's really health and improvement of function we talked about. The services are a means to that. Would that be fair? So it's services, it's health, and it's function, and probably a whole lot of other things. But then the question is, what do you tell them to do with that? And it boils down to a few things. One is, you'd want to, if you so desire, I think you'd want to instruct them to assure that this access is equitable, that it's equitable across the state geographically, that it's equitable in terms of cultural issues, language, other sort of unique needs of populations. You want to assure that because of some unique feature, everybody has equitable access. And you would say you want it to be equitable to special needs of populations, whether that's special medical needs, people with disabilities. You want it to be equitable. We can fill in maybe a few more words there. You want it to be available. The old, you know, if you have a card, does that mean you can actually get health care? It needs to be available to people. It needs to be timely. You want it at the right place, at the right time. You want to, I wish Senator Morissette were here, because I could talk to him about, and you'll mention when he comes in that I mentioned this. You want to talk about the community providers and then the existing structures, local and communities. You want there to be an appropriate array of services to assure availability, appropriate networks, and all the different ways that we talk about making something available. And you would want to tell them to go out and monitor that, to set up a system so that you can actually monitor whether or not people are getting access, whether it's equitable, whether it's timely, and to be able to come up with a plan to monitor and come back to assure that indeed you're getting at those things. So, with that, what are your thoughts? Representative Freeman.
I had one piece to the available part, and that would, I want it to be available in an economic way. I want it available so it was efficient.
Oh. So two pieces there.
Well, I mean it the same. I mean at the lowest cost per unit possible to get that availability. In other words, I'd rather have it, say, in an urgent care clinic next to the emergency room than having it in the emergency room where it'll cost five times as much.
So you want the economic lowest cost per unit and want to assure that there's no economic barrier to availability as well.
That too.
Economics on barriers.
If this new system we're looking at is set up in a way which we have envisioned, a lot of these things will be answered not by the entity but by market forces. And let me explain why that needs to happen if we've done this correctly. We're issuing organ health cards in which the Medicaid program pays at a true cost level as it was first designed to do, and we are issuing an organ health card to those who are uninsured right now, then some market forces will come into play. As an example, the big problem we find when we look at the geography of the state and the rural areas that have difficulty attracting and maintaining providers is, one, they have a large uninsured population, a large Medicaid population, a large Medicaid population, and a very small commercial market, so that incomes there are restricted very dramatically. And then there's always other problems. Some people think going into a small rural community is a form of spousal abuse, but I don't necessarily agree with that. That is a problem for recruiting sometimes. But the market will answer some of these questions for us if we set this up properly, and the market will drive some of this. Now, having said that, I still think there's a role for this entity to play besides setting up the market to take care of it for us, and that is this kind of things we're doing now. As an example, for many rural providers, we have a program in place that funds a percentage of their medical malpractice insurance, and that has been a success in keeping providers in those areas. The need for that hopefully will go down if the marketplace is set in the right position so the market can drive this for us. Having said that, there still have to worry about special needs population and cultural differences. Being culturally correct, the entity may have to help us with that too.
You sort of added a third dimension to the economics piece. One dimension was lowest cost per unit. Another was that economics not be someone's individual economics not be a barrier. There's the affordability piece. And then you just said there's sort of this economics of the market in local areas, that the economics are such that you have a market and a local economics of healthcare that supports the availability and assures that it's available. And that may be different in different communities. Is that great?
Well, but
Senator Westland and then Representative Kevin.
Two pieces to that. I mean, one is talking about the economics of the client. You've also got to talk about the economics of the provider, and you've got to reimburse those providers well enough to be in those places. And it also raises, you know, the question of workforce and having the proper, you know, capacity to supply the client needs. We all know there's workforce issues, and I, for the first time in this committee, unlike all of my colleagues, every other one up here, branched off topic and started to blush some, you know, finance and workforce topics today. But when you're talking about access,
okay, you've got to have the
folks in place.
So big economics of payment, as well as a piece of that. If you build it and you pay for it, then they come.
No, I was just going to try to reinterpret or understand what Dr. Bates said, because I think it's very important, and that is that we should expect this entity to ensure that the kind of access we hope Oregonians have to this these services are available in every place at every time. We may, might set up some broad goals for that, but really our hope is to get the underlying forces right to the point where these things produce. So I don't know if this the conversation that you've introduced, Dr. Goldberg, is framed around these are things that the entity shall ensure, that, you know, folks in rural parts of Oregon have access to mental health services. Well, I think that's really important. That's certainly a worthwhile goal. But is that the responsibility of the entity, or are we trying to design a system that creates, you know, incentives that compensates providers in ways that they will follow the needs of the state? And I think that's what the good senator was getting at.
I would agree with that statement, and but the key part of that is the monitoring of it to make sure that that, in fact, is happening, that as we build those incentives so the marketplace can function the way we'd like it to, that we monitor the outcomes of that. The market can drive this very well for us. That isn't to say that in every small community and spread across the state, everyone's going to have an MRI, a neurosurgeon, a dermatologist, and the rest of it. But they'll have basic primary health care, basic primary mental health care, and drug and alcohol treatment when there's enough population there to support it. And the market should do that for us. I mean, the market will say there's enough there to support that. We can, someone will go there because they can make a living.
Right. Also, against it, the Representative Greenman talked about, which is the, you know, lowest cost per unit. If you have an MRI in a community of 100, that's going to be a pretty high price per unit. It may be different in other communities. Representative Greenman.
Yeah, I'm a little troubled by this last exchange. And we obviously aren't going to have an MRI every 100 patients, nor would we want an MRI every 100 patients. But I was intrigued when I polled the HOPE initiative and polled the statement that every Oregonian has a right to effective and access to effective and affordable health care, and it's the obligation of the state to ensure that that happens. The congressional district that came up with the highest agreement with that statement was Representative Walden's congressional district. And that's because the citizens of eastern and probably southern Oregon recognize they don't have access to effective and affordable health care. And they're probably not talking about health insurance. They're probably talking about access to affordable and effective right. health care. And somewhere, I think, the extent to which market forces affect the behavior of individual AHPs, somewhere the entity needs to be able to get resources to bring to bear to make sure citizens across the state have access to health care. And that may not be a health insurance issue. That may be, here's what we do for 90% of the population, and then here's what we do for 10% of the population, which might be entirely different. I mean, I've been listening to my colleague talk about a lot of the problem not being access to health insurance, but access to health care. And I think we need to have a way to take that into consideration in this model.
But really, get
availability.
You want to be certain it's available.
At least in some minimum, it's acceptable way to the citizens everywhere.
And that this whole series of factors is going to play and have some sort of impact on that availability. But in the end, you're saying this is really going to be the proof of the pudding, and it may not be payment, it may not be something else. You may need to actually change the way you deliver care in a certain area.
The market might take care of 90% of the problem. We ought to leave room for the fact that we may need to solve another 10% of the problem some different way, and we ought to make sure we have room for that.
And if I could respond to that, we're saying the same thing, Mitch, absolutely saying the same thing. I'd like to see the marketplace take care of most of this, but if the monitoring shows that it's not happening, that they're not getting their basic primary care, the entity may have to step in, as we did with supplementation of the medical malpractice premiums, and help out even further. What I think of, and I'm using geography as an example, you could use inner cities the same way and other areas of the state that need help that just isn't there, and primarily it's because of a lack of pay in those situations, because of the payer mix. So if we can eliminate some of that, we'll see the market start acting differently, I believe. You won't be building hospitals in high-income neighborhoods or closing emergency rooms in low-income neighborhoods. Those kind of things will go away if there's proper pay involved. Not because people don't want to take care of each other, it's because the incentives are perverse in the system right now. So that changed. I give an example of that is we used to have a very strong program for placing new physicians into rural areas under a program where you finance your education some of us did it the Public Health Service. The problem with it is they go out, they'd be there for 4 or 5 years, pay the loan back, and then leave. The problem 15 years ago in our area was that between Medford and Bend, Oregon, there was no physician that entire area or nurse practitioner. They put a couple in there with the National Health Program, and as soon as their time was up, they left. Mm-hmm. There's nobody there now because we didn't change the thing in the market that would have kept them there. That was
National Health Service Corps.
Yeah. I mean, you can kind of force these things, but until you change that market, you're just kind of pushing things in instead of letting the market do the job it needs to do.
But it's also hard to get a symphony for their spouse to go.
Well, I said that some people might consider it a spousal abuse situation, okay?
Well, it's really that. I mean, you're talking about kind of the dynamic between being equitable and available and being responsible around how we think about this in terms of value. And that takes some creativity, and that's really what you want this entity to do, is to use a variety of levers and policies and other, hopefully, resources that may be at its disposal and at your disposal as a legislature to assure equitable, available care and help and function. Senator Cruz.
Thank you. Ben mentioned something that was incredibly significant. I doubt if he meant to, but he did. And
if it was that Ben?
No, well, no, that Ben. This Ben is really smart. But but when he was talking about Medicaid and reimbursement rates and what we're going to ask the feds for, because quite simply, the market will work if we're paying providers true cost, so they're incented to stay. And we have defined what primary care is based on the providers we're trying to incent. In other words, if it's primary care physicians, PAs, NPs, those sorts of folks, and that's what we're defining as primary care, but we also have the resources on the table to get close, at least, to true cost reimbursement, then we will, I think then we will find people incented to go to the underserved areas. And the market has to drive that for it to work.
That's what I'm saying. Couldn't agree more.
Senator Morse, you've been quiet. Any thoughts about this?
Well, I'm not sure.
Thank you, Bruce. I'm not sure you have a real market-driven system today in many respects, because if you look at the percentage of the population that's served by government-determined rates, they're not market.
Right.
So you wind up with that shift that goes to that small, 25-30% of the market that's probably actually market-driven. So it's a market system that's really skewed by virtue of an arbitrary reimbursement schedule that comes down from the federal government. So how we mesh these issues together so that it makes sense to the providers, and you do have a market-driven system, that's a big question.
For the state government also. The state. They send out some crazy rates too.
Okay, right. Yeah, we don't want to pay anybody anything. So, yeah. Thank you.
No, that's another lever, and we had a discussion about that. That's been a theme that's been through a couple of these meetings, is certainly another lever and another piece of this puzzle is exactly that, that a lot of what we do is driven by a federal entity, and that's got to be considered as a part of it.
Just as an example, I just looked at the financial statements for the Albany General Hospital. Deductions from revenue, 42.5%.
That's of the
cost.
Bill charges, not the cost. Right?
Well, you have your bill charges, and then you have your deductions
off the bill charges.
Off the bill
not
charges,
the
right? Right. So it's a function of. I mean, it's really screwy. You look at the income statements, and they really are nuts. But it's an accommodation to a system that is really not market driven. It's responding to arbitrary rates.
Someone else had their hand up.
I would offer, as part of the discussion, that the four components of how we are paid in the system are Medicare, Medicaid, the uninsured, and commercial. We have significant control of three of those four. We have no control over Medicare, which is a huge piece of it. But we do have some ability to get the uninsured insured. We set the rates for Medicaid.
Correct.
We set those rates at the state level. We have chosen to set them artificially incredibly low, lower than Medicare, producing a cost shift. And the third piece, commercial rates, we do not directly control. But if we corrected the market, I think we might see some leveling of those too.
Senator, is that also true in the fully capitated? I mean, I know we set crazy rates in the 20% that are fee for service. Do we also, by setting an artificially low capitation rate, do the same thing in the capitation?
In the fully capitated health plans, and Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong, about half the population that are a little more is in a capitated system in which there is a form of profit sharing, you might call it. And under those conditions, if certain goals in utilization and health are reached, those rates come up for providers to a significantly higher level, probably approaching Medicare, not to commercial, but significantly better.
Closer to 85.
It's significant. It's better than fee-for-service Medicare.
And we could potentially raise those higher.
And are we 80-20? Is that?
Managed care? Approximately 85-15.
So managed care is potential for not only significant savings with a system that arguably I think works well in producing access to services, but also increases the reimbursement to providers if they meet certain goals. It's an interesting and provocative system that I think we obviously need to continue, at least for that population.
Representative Richardson, you've also been quiet.
He's eating dinner.
Well, but he doesn't have his mouth full at the moment, so that's why I called on him. Any thoughts about, we've been talking about just wanting access, giving instructions for access to be equitable, available, and to be able to monitor it. Have we been missing anything?
No, I think the discussion about incentives is crucial to this discussion of access, because I mean, from Adam Smith's writings, I mean, it's about self-interest. Some people become doctors because they just want to give to society. A lot of people become doctors and other providers, and because that's their chosen profession, and it's not a hobby, and they want to do as well as possible. I have a son-in-law who's just graduating from medical school, and he's going to be a radiologist. I asked him about family practice, and he said, the numbers aren't there. He said, and a very small number of his graduating class will be family practitioners because the specialties are where they can make more money. Actually, we got into a big discussion because he said, you're an attorney, you like to make money, you never hassle anybody else about making money, and yet you make me feel guilty because I'm going to be a doctor and I want to make money?
Darn right.
And I didn't know what to say.
say you're a father-in-law. That's how father-in-laws behave.
I didn't know what to say. I thought, well, I'll have to think about that. But it was like he's doing what we all do, and that is you look for self-interest. And so look at the incentives.
You're telling me you were glad he was taking care of your daughter well.
Well, he did mention that. And he'll be a fine doctor. But the point is that if we want better access, then we need to do those things that will generate better access. Now, it doesn't always apply. I think I agree with the 90%, 10%. That there's some areas where it's very difficult. Now, that's not true. If you pay enough, you can have a doctor anywhere. But you then have to deal with the realities of what you've got.
That's right.
You can't just do it.
But we want to continue this to let the market drive this, correct?
Right. The market is a very important part of it. Mm-hmm. Other aspects, I don't see anything dealing with some of those aspects to access that consume a tremendous amount of money that then have an effect on the availability to access to others. For instance, 5% of Medicare patients consume 55% of the resources of Medicare. I mean, I just was listening to a C-SPAN congressional report just a few weeks ago. I mean, that's huge. End-of-life issues are huge. If a person qualifies and they want to have very expensive treatments when it will provide no reasonable expansion of life or improvement of quality of life, then why are those assets being expended? And the answer is because nobody wants to face that and have to deal with a very real, difficult thing to say, you know, you're 88 years old, you've got cancer, we can spend $20,000 a month for this treatment, but in reality, it's not going to do anything to help you. And so mm-hmm. we give them the process, we get the $20,000 a month, they live for a year, and they would have either way, except that now the system is $240,000 less in assets than it would have been had that money been utilized in other ways. And so one of the very difficult things that we need to deal with is how do you make decisions on community resources that are finite? They cannot go anywhere and everywhere, and there is only a limit. And so sometimes hard decisions have to be made. And I don't know who's making those decisions in any other state or country, but certainly we need to be willing somewhere in this debate to face the decisions of access, because it's a greater good in some ways, because you have a limited amount of resources.
I need to declare a conflict of interest in this discussion.
And you know what?
I'm one of those 5%.
Can you imagine this?
Okay.
You know how much we've invested in this man? But that's good. We want you to stay.
So I want to try something out.
Comment?
Sure.
Dennis, I'm not sure if you're just giving me a compliment because I'm a primary care physician, or just point out that I'm kind of stupid. You know.
It's a compliment because your heart's in the right place.
Oh, thank you.
And you also make enough. It's called sufficient for your needs. And not necessarily wants.
You got to ask his wife about that.
Yeah,
actually, she's a fine physician as well.
I wish you wouldn't bring that up right now. It's kind of a touchy point at home.
Well,
never gone. Thank you. Save me.
I think tonight we were going to do a couple things. We were going to cover access. We were going to try and get some work done and get done quickly and sort of set a model for coming in, getting some work done, and moving on. My sense is that we've had a good discussion about access. We've come up with, I think, some great direction and a great discussion. I'd like to give everybody one opportunity, if you'd like, to add or subtract something from this, and then we can sum it up and move on to next week. So, there are details, always details, and we can talk for many decades about healthcare. But did we capture the kind of key concepts about access? I'm going to take that as a yes.
I'll tell a story.
Please.
My grandfather used to tell the story from the early 20s about this father that was talking to his two sons, A.B. and Ike. And the sons, he said, you know, one of these days soon I'm going to make enough money so I can buy a horse and a buggy. and we'll have a horse and a buggy, and it'll be wonderful. And A.B. says, I'm going to ride in the front seat with Papa. And Ike says, no, I'm going to ride in the front seat with Papa. And the two boys get in an argument until Father finally says, A.B., Ikey, get out of the buggy. Now, somewhere here, these details are going to really, you know, we can write any number of details down, but we haven't bought the horse and buggy yet, and I think it's fine as it is, because the enterprise is going to, or the trust or the board or whatever it is going to really have to, when they sit down and have some responsibilities, figure this out.
Well said. Senator Morris.
Point, counterpoint. I
used to tell a story your grandfather told.
No stories. I personally, as we go down this path to give definition to this, I personally would be more comfortable the more specifically driven policy that we can make it, as opposed to broadly setting something in motion and then hoping that it achieves what we all thought it would achieve. So. But I think we're on the same
point
page.
Point taken.
We're on the same page.
There are hard decisions. So. We want to make them clearly and provide clear policy direction. Don't leave it to chance.
And we want to have a chance, as Senator Bates said, to review it when they've done it.
That's.
Yes.
Senator Weston.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my comment, is we can sit here as a public policymaking body with certainly responsibilities. And we can discuss this, and we would, until from now until the system collapses. I mean, no one's going to be completely happy.
And maybe a little bit after that.
And, yeah, we keep talking about it after that. I mean, the Jericho walls are tumbling down around us as we sit here. I mean, this should just be very apparent. So the process and the purpose, you know, is to design an expedited process with people with very specific knowledges, much greater than our own, you know, in very specific areas, well-staffed to key component to emphasize what's already been said here several times tonight, and that is to come back and report their findings. I mean, we'll be involved in this. This isn't going to be done in a vacuum or a back room. The, you know, for the good housekeeping seal of approval from the legislature. So while it's vague and that causes, you know, certain types of concern or anxieties, understandable, this will be, again, thoroughly reviewed. I would hope and trust that at that juncture, politics takes a back seat to policy and people. That is a key element to this. The other thing is, I mean, look what we've done here so far with really sometimes agonizing detail. We've had good discussions and reach consensus on the need for an entity, what access and eligibility should look like, process for benefits, and then early before we came down to 50, we had some extraordinary presentations on transparency and quality. Those are the things we're going to be putting, you know, on the written page to bring down to the committee starting Monday. And this will start to move with a great deal of alacrity. So it's kind of, you know, buckle up and hold on tight, because it's going to be quite a ride at that juncture.
Further comments? Senator?
Much. It's interesting. I first came into the building in 97, and the conversation in 97 was our healthcare system is in crisis. It was probably there before I got into the building. So we clearly are still in crisis. I think Dennis brought up some very good points about, and you have it on there, we never talked about it, special needs populations. You know, carve-outs, things like that. What do we do there? Because clearly, access to primary care doesn't serve those populations. So, I mean, that's clearly a carve-out in this thing. Access is a nice, we got a lot of nice words here, but, you know, I get down to this whole thing of what primary care is, and is this truly, and we never talk about safety net in any of this. You know, at some point in time, there can't be fallback on some of these things. Dennis is right. It's finite. We're going to have points in time, places in time, where we say no, pure and simple. We're going to have to be able to say no. And that's a hard word to use. I'm still uncomfortable with this entity. I think Frank had some good points that there needs to be some very specific things assigned to specific people to do in this thing, because ultimately this is our decision, and I don't want some thing running amok. Ben also mentioned transparency. I don't think we've defined what transparency is. We want it, but what is it? Is transparency discovering true cost? Is that transparency? Is transparency discovering true cost and finding a way to get the consumer the information of what true cost is? We're so far from true cost in this system now that it's very hard to find it. But is that something to drive towards? Now, I know I'm running a bit far afield here, Bruce, but you know, access to what, I truly believe it's got to be market driven, which is why I truly believe that one of the first charges, one of the first things that we do this session is get aggressive about the federal dollars. Because ultimately, without those dollars on the table, we're just in theory. Okay, without those dollars, without that flexibility, this is all just a nice theory. And
about a billion and a half by any.
Well, yeah. I mean, but it's not just saying just give us flexibility. It's saying at least give us the average for the nation in what you're paying us for Medicare or Medicaid or whatever. You know, because we're a low reimbursement state. So, you know, I mean, if we're going to ask, let's be aggressive about it. I mean, those are the sorts of things that I think need to come along with this, because unless we can put the dollars on the table, none of this will work. And without those dollars, I just don't see how we get there.
But we do have within our control the ability to get another $1.5 billion of biennium from Medicaid if we put another $600,000.
Right.
Our own money into it.
But do we want it with all the strings that they put on it, or do we want to be able to take those dollars and build our own system? Getting back to the basic premise of Archimedes is, if we had control of these dollars, could we build a better system?
But I would say let's get the $1.5 billion back into the system and then ask for the flexibility.
You know what? I'm going to call it timeout, because we actually have gone full circle. Which is perfect. and so we should keep this at a full circle. Plus, I promise we'd get out of here before 6:30, and I try and stay to my word. So you have come full circle. You started with some comments about we need to do something now, and that's what Senators Cruz and Representative Greenblatt again are talking about, how to do some things now, and there's some venues to do that, and we should, and we must, and we will. And at the same time, we also have to envision a different future beyond the right now, and we have to, and we must, and we will. But in order to do any of that, it's got to be specific. It's got to be clear. We've got to move away from the general to the real specific. And I think that's where you are right now. It's been a great discussion over the last several weeks, because I think it really helped get some of the variety of ideas on the table for you all to develop, I think, a common language and understanding to talk about what are some really complex issues that's really going to help in the next phase, which is to get some specifics on paper and then to have add some of that and shape and mold that and see if there could be consensus wherever that goes. So I think we're done with access and moving on to getting more specific about those things. And I think there's been some great wisdom by your co-chairs in sort of having this and continuing to get more and more specific, and probably need to have some more general discussions as time goes on.
Thank you, Bruce. We're going to bring a hard copy on Monday on several of these issues, so you can really have a chance to push and look, and we'll go forward from that point. I think and I hope that what we saw this evening with a consensus being built between two parties in both sides of this legislature, although it does not pertain to health care, bodes well for what we're trying to do here tonight and will continue to do. I sense a new dynamic in this legislative assembly that I have not seen in the last 6, 7, or 8 years, and I'm looking forward to continuing to be able to work both sides of the aisle in both the House and the Senate, with the exception of
Chris. Anyway.
Despite what he has just said, I believe it will. And any other comments by committee or committee members?
Mr. Chair, if you would indulge me to raise an issue that I think is germane to the topic that we've been pursuing, and that is the directions to the entity, this board. And the question is, I think, do we do the best job we can to set as specific policy direction as we can and then turn it to the board to implement by administrative rule, and then it's set off in motion? Or do we set the direction as specific as we can in policy, ask for the rule, you know, the fleshing out, and before it's implemented, come back to this body for a check again to make sure that it is reflective of what we set in motion? And I think there's a fundamental issue to think about with respect, given the magnitude of this whole enterprise, is that there's a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done. We will not be the ones to do it, but to double check and make sure that in fact that work is reflective of what we intend it to be. And I just raise that question for consideration as we move down this further down this road.
Thank you, Senator Morris. I started the discussion off tonight, and maybe I didn't make myself as clear as I should have. That is absolutely what the intent of this committee is, as we set this in motion, but it has to come back to the Legislative Assembly to receive a blessing to go forward. You just have to have that happen, and I would suggest that on a continuing basis, to a certain degree, that must continue. This entity must be monitored on a regular basis by the Assembly. It can't be simply, I don't believe, turned loose to do good with no oversight from us, us being whoever is there in the future. I just think that is a potential for unleashing something that could get out in an area where we don't want it to. So I think my answer to you is, in my mind, the latter of what you suggested, not just on this entity for this session, but on a continuing basis.
Mr. Chair, I like point counterpoint. And Senator really reminded me of something we have to talk about. We have to put in the parking lot. And that is the nature of that institution and the relationship of it to the rest of the state. I think the last thing we want to create is a typical state agency bogged down, I was thinking the administrative rules process, bogged down with administrative rules. We need to find a way to make an agency that can be as fleet and flexible as it needs to be to do its job and still have it in the context of the kind of oversight you were talking about. So that, I think that's a parking lot issue that we ought to talk about, and it's the nature of this institution, which I think needs to be different than almost any institution we've seen, although there may be some models, SAVE or something else. Maybe.
Mr. Chair, I'd agree with that wholeheartedly, and amidst follow up on where you started earlier in the evening. My grandfather once told me the right thing to do is always the right thing to do. I have no idea what that means, but he said it a
That's
lot.
That's pretty obvious.
And no, but
it's very profound.
You know, I think that gets to my discomfort with creating this entity. Now, clearly we need to have the really smart people that know a heck of a lot more than we do flesh out components of this. But at this point in the process, when we really don't have, we have some general idea of where we want to go, I think we reserve the final decisions to the Legislative Assembly. And which it says, so we aren't going to get into, we're going to say, go do this, and then they write rules. We say, go explore this, come up with your best shot at it, bring it back to us, and let us make the decision. I mean, I kind of envision that as the direction we're going.
Absolutely. So. And I'm going to take the prerogative of the chair and say a couple of things real quick. No more bedtime stories tonight. And I want you to note that Senator Cruz and Representative Greenlee said they agreed on something. Now, that is a new era in this legislative assembly.
We agree frequently, but okay. Senator Cruz will never admit it.
Yes. Mitch, I've admitted it more times
and
than you
can count. And with
that
comment, I'm going to call an end to this committee meeting. Thank you. I'm sorry. Oh, God, I just know that.
Great-great-grandfather. Will we never to make a time representation to a committee in hearing room 50 comprised of malcontents and ourselves. So I figured if we keep talking for another 5 minutes, we can embarrass Bruce publicly.
Closed.